Hey geeks, welcome back to our gang. I'm your co-host Love, and as always, I'm here with my twin Lee. Hey girl, what's up?
Hello everyone, thanks for joining us. Today we have a new episode and new guest, Chef Diva from Philly. Thanks for joining us.
Hey guys, thank you for having me today. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes girl, we are so excited to have you. How are you?
I'm doing well, how about yourself?
We are good. So usually, you know, we talk comics, but we also talk other things. And I'm big into culinary stuff, so I had to have you on. So my first question for you is, you've been a chef now for over 17 years, and what made you choose this career path, and what made you choose the name Chef Diva?
Okay, yeah, so as far as my career path, I think it comes from me being the first granddaughter in the family. I was the fourth grandchild on my mom's side, and I was the first grandchild on my dad's side, and I was a female, so of course my grandmother's had me in the kitchen with them, you know, growing up in the 90s. We didn't have cell phones and things like that, so we were actually learning how to cook and helping them out, you know, when they were watching their stories and everything, snapping peas and cutting onions and, you know, doing everything that grandmothers had us young kids doing back in the day. And then me just having a bunch of cousins younger than me and siblings as well, I was taught how to cook by both of them early because I was by myself.
No, I'm saying I understand that. So having to be in the kitchen, watching stories. Yep, I feel that. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. So then what happened was my grandmother, when she, you know, raised me, my mom was around, but she was young when she had me. So she was going through college and everything like that. She passed away when I was 12 years old. And that took a toll on me because I really looked at her like my mother. And, when I noticed that she always had a bunch of people at the house, everybody would be happy when they would be eating. It was always a happy moment when we were gathering for food. And she was always entertaining, having car parties and all of that, with it being so many of us. So I decided, you know, I might as well go to culinary school and learn how to cook professionally. So when I entertain people, I can be paid for it. We're not going to just do this for fun, use all of my energy and be cooking and, you know, doing these events and everything, and nobody's patronizing me, but they'll patronize others.
Okay, I heard that. And what made you choose your chef name?
Oh, so my chef name actually came from a friend of mine. He used to play on the show The Wire, HBO. And I was in Miami. It was Memorial Weekend. And we were running around, and they had the cameras out. And we had ran into Busta Rhymes and a couple people. And he was like, you know, this is my private chef. This is my private chef. And it was like, oh, you know, well, what's her name? And we didn't know. He was like, looked at my outfit, and he was like, Diva, it's Chef Diva. She's Chef Diva. And I was like, yeah, I'm Chef Diva. And it was like, she's a chef, you know, because I have my heels and, you know, my outfit's on, because, you know, we used to live in Miami, so you know how the life was. And we were dressing sexy every day as much as we could. So they didn't have a clue that I was a chef. They probably would have thought I was a waitress or a front of the house manager. So he actually just kind of threw that name out of there, and it stuck with me all these years.
Okay, yeah, I know about that Miami life, girl. Yes, that's cute. I like that. I like that he just looked at you and that's the name I came up with.
So you said that you had celebrity clients, including someone from The Wire. That being one of my favorite shows, I have to ask if you could tell us who it was.
Oh, yeah. So I had JT the Source and I had Bodie. That was one of my
good
friends.
Oh, my God. I love Bodie.
Yeah, we all do.
I loved him.
Oh, no, for sure. And my friend JT the Source, he was on there as well. And it was all of them in the group. Slim Charles as well. They were all in Miami at the one time. And it was just funny because it was really like we were all kind of stuck in the moment. And they had this guy that was out in New York that was shooting a film called like Raw Dog TV or something. I don't know if you remember back in the early 2000s when we had a lot of that MTV jams and, you know, where a lot of people were riding around, you know, cameras, people were popping out of their trucks and their vans with their cameras, just interviewing people, just any and everywhere. And they had all those different, you know, little channels where they had, you know, like I was saying, like Raw Dog TV, or I guess those were the earlier YouTube channels, if you think about it.
And so you mentioned Miami. So do you want to say where you studied at?
Absolutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. Are we allowed to curse or what, baby?
Yes, we are.
Johnson and Wales. I went to Johnson and Wales University. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I went for culinary arts and food and beverage management, and it was a doozy. We didn't know, you know, from our heads to our feet when we were going to college every day. I don't think we knew the life that we would be in, you know, this many years later, but I feel like we all had a dream, and I feel like anybody that stuck to that dream coming out of that school is actually doing very well in life. You know, like you said, 17, 18 years fast forward.
Yes. Jay Wu, Wildcats, let's go. That was the school. It's closed now, guys, but Johnson Wales University of North Miami, that was a lit campus, I have to say. So you, as a chef, what is the one kitchen appliance that you can't do without?
The blender.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I don't use a blender. I don't really cook like on your level, but like I have no use for a blender. I don't have a blender.
I just feel like in any situation, the blender saves me. So for example, if I'm doing soups and it could be just a little too chunky, or you know, like, you know, if you don't have your immersion blender with you, you can always take that soup and pop it in a blender to get that, you know, get it to where you need it. You can do your mashed potatoes in there. It's just the blender is a source that if you need anything pureed or just smoothies, a lot of things can come from it. If you had to survive out of everything in the kitchen, like, I feel like the blender will help you to survive the best. It chops up fruits. It chops up vegetables. You know, you can, like I said, you can make smoothies, you can make gazpachos, anything like that, which is a cold soups. You can also, you know, have your drinks, you know, juice, just anything that can be blended, because if you don't have no teeth, you know, you do have to do everything through a straw, right? Or if you don't have no capabilities of chewing anymore, how do you get fed? You get fed pureed. In the nursing home, we feed people pureed food, and their food goes in a mold to make it look like what it is. So if it's chicken, the chicken is pureed, and then we put it in a mold in a refrigerator and then pop it on their plate, and it looks like chicken, but it's in puree style.
That's so true.
Or peas or something like that. So in reality, the blender is the main thing people should want, because if you can't do anything else, long as you can drink it, you'll be okay.
That is good to know. So what is your signature dish and why is it so important to you?
So my signature dish is my grilled watermelon. It's actually a dish. It's a salmon dish. It's grilled watermelon topped with a shaved onion and arugula salad with a vanilla bean vinaigrette with citrus. So it's actually a citrus vanilla bean vinaigrette. I'm not using that much vanilla bean. I don't use no vanilla in it. I just use the bean. And then I do my citrus with it and the vinegar and the oil. The dish is so important to me because I was working for Chef Irma Lagasse. It was probably in 2007. And I know that they were coming up with specials. And if this special won over everyone, it went on the menu for a couple months. So I'm the person that did that dish, and that dish went on the menu. So that is why that dish became my signature and my specialty, because I came up with it while I was there. I grilled the watermelon because we used to grill pineapple a lot. So I was like, man, why don't we just try the watermelon? And it actually worked. And I set the salmon on top of the watermelon. It's like a summer salad. And it's a fresh piece of salmon. And then you put that arugula and shaved onion salad on top of it with that citrus vanilla vin. And you're out of there.
Sounds interesting. Because, yeah, I would never think to grill watermelon because it is so much water in it. But
That's what makes it so good, is because there's so much water in it. Once it cooks, it holds. It turns, it shrinks it a little bit, but the sweetness of the watermelon, you can actually enjoy it better than when it's raw, because you are eating a lot of water. But when you cook it, all that water is cooked out of it. Now it's just a nice piece of watermelon, and you can actually enjoy the fruit.
So what advice, you know, you work with Irma Lagasse, another Jay Wu alum. What advice do you have for new culinary students that's joining the field now?
Well, what I can see is that a lot of people have social media. A lot of the new chefs are very, 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 very fancy. We were all about plate presentation and things like that back in the day. My thing is just don't get lost in that. Make sure that you're definitely when you're becoming a chef, you have to know that there are other avenues of the business. I know that you see social media and think, oh, I'm going to go to culinary school and then I'm going to come out and be a caterer. You have to remember that you still have to understand time management, business management, menu management, scheduling and everything like that. And I feel like a lot of students that come out of culinary school now, they don't even go in the industry to get the experience that they need to be a great chef. They're just coming out because their food is looking good and they post it and people are starting to hire them and they're calling themselves like chefs. But if you went into the industry, you actually just be a line cook or a prep cook. You wouldn't even be the chef because you don't really know what a chef is. So I feel like all students that are going in, I think that you need to go at least do 10 years experience in the kitchen once you come out of culinary school before you start going around calling yourself a chef. Because if you were really set up on a time restraint, would you be able to actually, you know, run a banquet's dinner? Would you be able to actually, like, you know, put out the schedule? Would you be able to do food costs and labor costs? It's more than just making food look good.
Yeah, it's a lot of social media, a lot of TikTok chefs, and then you see shows like the competition shows now that highlight a lot of the social media chefs because they have followers, and it's like, but can they really cook? So that's exactly a good point.
And it hurts us that have been doing it for years that can really cook. And we didn't have those opportunities like that. And then you have these people coming in behind us and you're giving them all this recognition like we weren't the ones that paved the way.
So you're not only a chef, but an author. You have a book titled The Grime to Glamour. What motivated you to write that?
So that was during the pandemic. I was actually engaged and my fiance passed away. I had been wanting to write a book for a long time. I had a lot of issues growing up, I think, of things I was holding on to. And I got with a book coach and she kept talking about, you know, you should write it down. And then I got with some different coaches and they were saying that I need to, you know, tell my story. And I didn't know if I should do it. And it was crazy because he had got into a car accident where he couldn't work or anything or rarely walk for about 3 months. And that's what made me write the book.
God will show you a path out of something.
He do. And then the book isn't about none of that with him. It's actually about my life growing up and what made me become a chef. And then I had recipes in the back of the book. Now people feel like I should write another book on how life has been since he has been gone. Mm-hmm. But I don't have that in my spirit yet. I understand the first book did well, but I don't have it in my spirit to write another book yet.
What was the most surprising aspect of the professional kitchen when you first started working that, you know, what about working in a professional kitchen surprised you the most, coming right out of culinary school?
The competition to get amongst each other. Nobody's a team. Yeah. It's actually more competition amongst the chefs. The cooks, we're all competing for a spot, and then the chefs are competing to keep their spot. And when you have younger chefs coming in that actually know what they're doing and learning more, a lot of the older chefs get threatened and they try to belittle us as we come in due to the fact that we could potentially take their spot. And that's not what we come in to do. We're actually coming to learn and to learn from the chefs around us, you know, and enjoy it. But they actually treat you totally the opposite way.
And why do you think that the industry doesn't foster that type of team effort and it's all like, you know, everyone for themselves?
Well, no. We're a team because if we weren't a team, we wouldn't be able to execute every day.
Okay.
It's more as when you're going to certain places and certain places, a lot of people hire and then they build you from within. So when you're going into a new place and you have somebody that's been there for 4 years, you can't expect to go in and be in the chef because it's not going to work. You know, you have to go in and you have to show yourself. And that person that was there first, they're going to be the people that actually get moved up before you. So that's why they always say it's best to go into hotels and hospitals and things like that so you can learn how to do banquet style cooking. and learn how to cook in a team setting, because you're not going to come out become being the big boss yet. It's going to take a long time. They want you to have at least 15 years experience to become an executive chef. An executive is different. The executive knows how to do everything from the nitty-gritty, from the front of the house to the back of the house. He knows his numbers from the bar to the kitchen, you know, to the waitstaff, to everybody. Because him and the general manager knows the ins and out of full every day. Compared to the sous chef and the cooks and the waiters and the waitresses. It's a whole level of people in one place for it to operate.
Gotcha. You also have other businesses. I want to make sure I highlight that. Your travel business and everything like that. You want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, so the travel thing definitely came from school because we did travel and tourism a lot. I used to go to FAMU down there all the time, which was the hospitality college. You remember. Oh, not FAM. I'm sorry, FAMU, yes, because that was in Boca, but FIU. We used to go down there a lot, and that was a hospitality college that a lot of my friends were in hospitality, and a lot of them were in travel and tourism, and I felt like that's something that I should have did. So I learned a lot about it throughout the years we were in school. I just never put a lot of effort into it until the pandemic happened. When the pandemic happened is actually when I started my travel business. I had already been traveling throughout the year, and when my mom took me on a Mediterranean cruise for 2 weeks in Europe, actually, we flew into Spain, Barcelona, and she took me to 3 different countries on a cruise, but we went to 4 different cities in each country, you know, as the days went on. I knew that I had to bring people out for this experience, especially African-Americans, because, you know, for a long time we couldn't get passports, and I just wanted them to see, you know, it's better to leave the country. Like, we're treated better everywhere we're going. America really sucks for us, and once you get out here and you learn other cultures, you actually appreciate where you live a little bit better. So I started my business at the top of 2020, and now I'm in year number 4, and I'm actually now partnered with a company in the United Kingdom. I wanted to partner with a company in the United States, but a lot of people are greedy and a lot of people want everything for themselves. So the people in the UK have noticed my business. I was booking a lot of people throughout their area, and they recognize my business, and now we're partners, and now my business is doing even better because everybody in America looked over me. I had to get with a team elsewhere, and now I'm making more because I am dealing with somebody outside of the U.S. So you'd be surprised how many people won't support you when you do your businesses. So don't ever expect your family and your friends when you have a business to just run and support you, because they're looking at you from the time you were born to the time you are now, and they know all your ins and outs. So they're very judgmental compared to people that don't know you, that you're trying to show your changed life, and you're trying to show that people change and people grow. Every 5 years, people change. And people have to understand that. That's why people get divorced. That's why people, you know, be in marriages for years, and then after a while, they don't want to be together. People change. Life changes people as we go along as well. So it's like you kind of got to go with the change or you move on. So when you start businesses, move on if people don't want to accept your change. But don't stop your dreams for nobody.
That's a bar. You don't ever have to stop your dreams for anyone. And that's true. You know, some people, it's harder to get family sometimes to support a new business venture that you're doing. And it's sometimes easier to get the support of strangers.
Do you ever do chef work in, like, the soup kitchens?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feed the homeless once a month. Actually, I did something back in my hometown around the summer months where I did donations. Where I had fed the homeless. On Wednesday, we did it one day, and I have fed over 200 people. We had food from Baggiano's. I had food from Chef Ricky's Cafe. I also did food myself. People donated food. I went to the produce junction and got all the vegetables and fruit. And we went out there and served them pasta. I had jambalaya. I had greens. I had chicken. I made them like real food. We had salad. We had all kinds of fruit salads, and then I had a whole layout of donation of clothes. I had over 40 bags of clothes. I had three people lay the clothes out, and they were just able to come up and pick whatever they want, and they came through the line and ate. I just went on the block and set up. We have an area called Kensington in Philadelphia that's really bad. And I went down there and set up. And then that Sunday, God told me to do it again before I left. And that Sunday, we had double the donations. So I ended up feeding 400 people. And it just so happened that a documentary was out there that day. And they were having church service outside, trying to get some of the people in Kensington to go and get rehab. I didn't even know they were going to be there that day, but in my spirit, I was told to move that day, and that's what I did. And we actually fed them hot breakfast. I did a big pot of grits and oatmeal, and we had sausages, and a chef friend, Chef Damon, he did over 100 pancakes for me. Some people sent me hot dogs. Karima's Creations, like, I mean, people were donating and giving me food left to right. The army came and donated like over 60 box lunches. I mean, it was amazing. Like, the day just felt good. I didn't get paid. Nobody got paid. It was all about giving to people that day. And then in Houston, down here, we fed about 400. I had helped in the soup kitchen. I love giving back to people. Every week in my house, if I got food left over, I gather it, because it's a lot of homeless people here in Houston, and I just go out and I give the food out. I just love doing it. I don't like to hold on to anything, and I definitely don't like throwing anything in the trash. I'm very huge on tithing at church as well. So anything that has to do with giving, I give, because it all comes back to me 100-fold, always.
Okay, so you know how, like, you watch Food Network, and you'll see, like, oh, you're in, quote-unquote, Trisha's Kitchen, or this, that, and the third. You know what I mean? And we don't see too many Black people in that world. We don't see too many Black people, Black chefs hosting the competition shows, like a Master Chef, like a Next Food Network star, or whatever it is. Why do you think that is?
That's because we were always the bottom of the totem pole, and this is part of the reason why I don't stay. I didn't stay in the industry, and I left it after 17 years because I was tired of being, actually 16 years, I was tired of being smacked in the face by white people coming in and taking the positions of us. They love to put us Black people in the position of the executive chef and the sous chef, but they don't want to give us the titles nor the money. And I just remember, you know, just being in Dave & Buster's, being in the front of the house and being open in that place, then being called back during the pandemic when it was only not even three or four servers. I was working 13-hour shifts daily for weeks during the pandemic where people were dropping dead every day for COVID. And I praise God every day that I never got it one time. It was people around me serving that came in afterwards. It was getting COVID around me and I never caught it. Because God knew that I was working unselfishly. So he made sure that I was never touched by that. And what that was is they let this white girl down. Now, mind you, I have been cooking for 15, 16 years. I have been the first time in my front of the house in Dave & Buster's as a waitress. And I did that in sales position. And I made a lot of money. And they let somebody come in that had been waitressing for some years before me get the position of a supervisor because they said they didn't want me messing up my money. No, y'all didn't want me messing up the money that I was making for you all because I was getting older. So I didn't want to keep running around the floor like that. I was showing my work to become the manager so I don't have to move around as much as I wanted to anymore, like as much as they wanted me to, excuse me. So that's why we're always at the bottom. I've seen in the industry where Black men were executive chefs in certain places, and then we open up new places, and they're the group cooks, and the white boys are the big bosses. I had this one white boy, he had just came out of culinary school, and all because he worked for a certain chef for 2 years, and I had 11 years on him, and they made him the sous chef over me. They made him the sous chef over the Black executive chef that was running a whole restaurant before he got there. That's what they do to us. That's why you don't see us on those shows like that. Now you're starting to see, if you look at the Food Network, you're starting to see more and more Black people are hosting. They do have a couple of Black chefs that are actually hosting shows now. But all those years that I was becoming a chef, trying to get my own cooking show, trying to be a host on Food Network and everything, they were looking over us for all that time. Now they're opening up to different Black chefs. They weren't before because they have no choice, because we're in the offices now. You know, we're the executives of companies now. So you have to have diversity.
You have to. That's true. And that's interesting that you say that you're being looked over, even with your resume of working under Chef Emeril Lagasse, who is a celebrity chef. That's kind of crazy that they were still, you know, you still had that struggle of trying to get what you wanted to get going, even with all your success.
Let's be correct, because that's wrong information. And not him. I started under him. I started under them in culinary school. Right. I'm talking about as my years went on and I was actually in the positions in the years in. I worked for them from 2007 to 2010. That was still during culinary time. Oh, I would have never been a chef then. I was actually became the lead line cook there. That's why I thought it was sweet for us women, because I didn't realize in the industry they build you within the company. So I was with them for 3 years. That's how I moved up. So when I left them, I thought that I could go be in the same position anywhere I worked at, and that wasn't it. Because when I moved back up to the northern states from coming from Florida, then it switched, because now these restaurants do food in season. So now it's ingredients that I never even heard of or dealt with that I have to learn how to cook, and they only are only here for 3 months. And then it's another set of ingredients for 3 months. And then another set of ingredients for 3 months, yet I became a chef in Florida when it's tropical all year long. So that's another thing. Depending on where you live and where you come from is how you cook. I'm not from Texas, so I never learned how to smoke. I learned how to smoke in culinary school, but the people down here in Texas, they were raised smoking meat. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the chefs smoke meat. They do barbecue. They do Mexican. They do Cajun, because that's the kind of food that they grew up around and learned how to cook. Compared to where we live, where we're from in the Jersey, New York, in the, all that tri-state area, I learned how to cook Italian food, Asian food, Mediterranean food. Big on the Greek and Italian up in that area. And then when I was in Florida, I was learning all the Caribbean style food, fish, plantains, you know, beans and rice from all the Haitians and the Cubans and the Colombians. So that's why I say, when you're a chef, I worked in D.C. I learned how to use crab meat in different ways I never even thought to cook crab. So as a chef, you need to move around in different states, in different cities, to actually be really good, because nobody cooks the same wherever you are.
What is your favorite superhero and why?
Most important question.
Wow, that's funny that y'all say that, but I actually like Poison Ivy. I know that's crazy, but I was hurt like 3 times for Halloween.
I respect that. No, I like Poison Ivy. I can see.
Okay, exactly. So you can see my point with her. So the thing with her was, she really wasn't open to everybody's energy. And if you gave her bad energy, she just poisoned you to kind of stay away from her and what she got going on. She didn't, she didn't totally take you out. You know, she just poisoned you and kept you from doing bad things to her or people she enjoyed around her. So that's why I fuck with her, because she doesn't, you know, she was a superhero. Like, even though they thought she was the bad girl, but she really wasn't. She just didn't take a lot of bullshit. Like, she was on her throne, and she knew everything that she had, and she got herself. So she wasn't letting nobody come through to destroy it.
I like that answer. That's a good answer.
Yeah, I'm Poison Ivy all day. I was just talking about her the other day. That's so funny.
Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on. That's all the time we have with you today. You're dropping truth bombs. You do not hold back. That's that Philly in you.
You already know.
You already know. So again, thank you so much for coming on and joining us. And we want to make sure that everyone goes to your website and pick up your book, thegrindtoglamour.com, to book you.
Absolutely. Yes. They can also book travel through me. You can also book me for catering or private chef work. I do more private chef work now. You can get the book and, like I said, travel. And also, we're doing food and beverage consulting now as well.
Sounds good.
So, get that money.
Yes. Open the, you know, walk through the doors and talk to you. Yes, and leave the doors open for the next chef. So we thank you for joining us. Until next time, Geek, I'm Love.
And I'm Lee, signing off.